points.
Call the March 26th meeting of the State Government Finance Division meeting to order. Chair Kahn, would you like to present your House File 3987 and any amendments that you may have?
It's actually Representative Villapar's bill, so I think he'll move the bill to start with.
We moved it yesterday. Isn't that still before
us? Yeah. Okay, we've got to delete all everything, and we don't have to move it today.
So, Representative De La Force, does that mean you're going to take your bill off the table then? Move it off the table?
Sure.
Whatever. Technical.
I take it off the table.
Okay.
This little mess you have.
And, okay. Now, Representative De La Force, do you have any amendments?
There's significant amendments, Madam Chair, but I've only offered one of them, so I call upon wherever you want to start, whatever your pleasure is, Madam Chair. We'll find out who takes ownership of these amendments.
Let me just point out, we do have a change, Madam Chairman, we do have a change in the spreadsheet, and maybe we ought to, and a change in the appropriations, and maybe we ought to work on that one first, if I can ask Ms. Thomas for a point, Ms. Robinson.
Okay, Ms. Robinson, are you going to go through the change in the spreadsheet?
To finance, yes, and to the compliance.
Okay, the change to the Department of Finance on the spreadsheet has changed their reduction from 4% to 2% to match the other we were seeing a year ago. And on line 32, that was changed to the reduction to the finance operations portion of the department to $312,000 per year, and on line 33, $109,000 per year. Because this is an additional cost to the bill, there's been an increase to the compliance initiative in Department of Revenue. The appropriation now on line 40 would be $2,241,000. And the revenues, which again are at a 3-to-1 ratio, are increased up to line 50 to $6,723,000 for the quote year. And I'll make those changes directly in the bill numbers.
I would like to move that.
Yes,
okay, so you're moving the A81510?
No. I'm moving the discussion. I'm moving what Helen just said. The changes to the spreadsheet. And to the bill.
Okay, any Representative Kahn makes that motion? Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Kahn, would you like to move your 8-H amendment?
I think that all the amendments are I think that all the amendments are in the bill in order. Madam Chair, can you take them in order unless they are in the package?
Yes, and that was the first one that I had is the 881510 amendment, the technical Department of Military Affairs amendment.
Okay.
Madam Chair, this is a technical amendment that was drafted after I consulted with the Jim Reinhold, who's the fiscal analyst for the Ag and Vets Affairs, so that we have parallel language dealing with the change to support our troops, license plate revenues and appropriations. And what this does is, under current law, the revenues from the supporter troop license plates are deposited in a special revenue fund, and they're directly appropriated to the Department of Military Affairs and also to Vets Affairs. And the language in this bill changes the appropriation from a direct appropriation, which is limited by the number and has to be renewed every 2 years, to a statutory appropriation, which continues to exist in statute. And so what this is merely doing is removing the direct appropriation. The statutory appropriation is already in the amendment, and actually the impact of this and the other changes in the bill is to increase the funding for that program from $338,000 per year to $448,000 per year. It's not reflected very clearly on the spreadsheet. I apologize for that, but if anyone has questions afterwards, I can explain the numbers to them.
Okay, I'll move that amendment.
Okay. Con moves the A81510 amendment. Is there any discussion to the amendment, members? Seeing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Kahn, the next amendment that I have is the A1 amendment.
Okay.
This is, Madam Chairman, this is an amendment that was brought to me by the teachers, who have some explanation about why this makes them treated like other organized agreement in state government. And I'd like to ask Gerdes Meyer is here. I'd like to ask him to explain it.
Absolutely. Gerdes Meyer, please come to the testify table and state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Gerdes Meyer, and I work for Teamsters Joint Council 32. We have some 56,000 active and retired members. We're here today to ask you to level the playing field for us a little bit as far as political PAC deductions from our members' checks, voluntary political contributions. Teamsters are a bit different than other unions that represent public employees in the fact that we support federal, state, and local candidates and issues. And for the federal portion of it, it needs to be deducted separately on a voluntary basis from our members. So we're asking you, I have a long technical explanation, and I can give that to you if you would like. But what we're asking is that these amendments to A1 is to set up a system that allows the state to deduct from our members' checks voluntary contributions. This happens already at the state of the University of Minnesota, and as I said before, other labor organizations that represent state and county employees. And we'd like for you to take a look at that and give that some consideration. Okay, I'll probably stand for questions. I have a long technical explanation why we need to do this, but the federal issues and candidates have to be handled separately.
Thank you, Mr. Gerdes Meyer, for your testimony. Representative Kahn, do you have anything to add before we go to questions?
Nope.
Any questions from members? Representative De La Force.
Madam Chair, Mr. Gerdes Meyer, was this a bill? And if it was a bill, what was its fate throughout the legislative process?
Madam Chair, Representative Delaforce, no. We had spoken to Representative Kahn and told her. What we run into is when we talk to the heads of state or county government, and they say they're sympathetic, but to the point that there's nothing in the statute that allows for this. And then after talking to Representative Kahn, she agreed to offer this amendment for us. So, no, it's my knowledge, this has not been a bill.
Okay. Representative Kahn.
Well, Madam Chairman, it just seemed that it was such a minimal financial manipulation that we could just do it. Again, I don't think we have it.
Well, and Madam Chair and Representative Kahn, I don't necessarily have an objection to this change, but then again, it contemplates changes to both 16A and references 179A by reference, and I'm curious if the Department of Employee Relations, for example, is aware of this and wants to weigh in. As I said, I don't have an opinion either way on it myself, but I want to make sure, and of course, you and I both are no strangers to amending things onto omnibus bills, but I want to make sure that we're not engaging in the unforeseen consequences here, and that's my only concern. If the steward is even here, if they want to weigh in, if they've had an opportunity to, that's my only concern.
I do not see anybody from Doer here, but...
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Here. Please come to the testifier stand and state your name for the record, Mr. Giordano.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Jared Giordano, Department of Employee Relations. I'm embarrassed to say that this is the first I've seen this language, and I will try to digest it very quickly here. My initial thought is that I'm afraid I'm not in a good position to comment as to the efficacy of this provision. I would take it back, and I would be happy to report back in the near future as to the workability and if there's a cost or anything else.
Okay, Representative Tom?
Chairman, this bill has two more committees to go to on the floor.
Okay.
And it's much better to have these discussions in a small group than it would be no problem to have. There are objections,
those
objections could be raised at the next level.
I think Mr. Gertesmeyer has a comment.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I did get some technical advice from Representative Mulry, and I know that he was in contact with the department and Mr. Hanson, I believe.
Tom Hanson.
Tom Hanson, yeah. So that they were aware that this is out there. Okay. And to point out just for everybody's clarification, the acronym for our PAC is DRIVE, and that's Democratic, Republican, Independent Voter Education. So it covers everybody at the table.
Good. All right. Any other questions from members?
Makes people on the other side more comfortable with this. Every time I've had a serious opponent, they're into a fat person.
You would have only one representative. Only one.
Okay, if there's no further questions on the amendment, then all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
No. Motion prevails. Okay, Representative Tom, the next amendment I have is the A2 amendment.
Oh, okay, I guess I moved the A2 amendment. This is one that came to me from Representative Zucavina, who is concerned, and other, perhaps Representative Solberg too, they're concerned about efforts that have been made to change the name of something that those of us who have been in the legislature for a while know is totally sacred, the IRRRB. And so this is he would like to put this in to not have the name change.
Okay, any questions on the amendment?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative, what were they trying to change the name to?
I didn't get that far. I mean, I might have, but I think I got it.
Madam Chair and Representative Conn, reading this, looks like Representative Rukavina was madder than usual. It's a misdemeanor and subject to immediate removal as an agency. I think the penalty is a little harsh.
I think we could probably amend
it. Representative Tepin.
Maybe we could
have nice. Pulling down the chair, is that not a good idea, Representative Tepin?
Madam Chair, I'm just wondering if, since it would call for a penalty of a misdemeanor, I'm wondering if this shouldn't have to go to the Public Safety Committee.
I don't think that's felony.
We can have staff
Why don't we put this aside and let staff temper the language before we deal with it again?
So, Representative Connie, we're tabling the A2 amendment.
Take out the last
sentence.
Yeah,
exactly. Madam Chair, I offer an oral amendment to remove the last sentence of the amendment.
So, after the word, or as from section, or line 110, as all the way down?
Yes,
except for 1113. All right, got it. Any further discussion on the amendment as amended? Okay, so we have to vote on the amendment, and all the...
I accept it.
Oh, you accepted it. Thanks for the mentorship there, the procedure. Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Kahn, the next amendment I have is the A3 amendment.
Well, Madam Chairman and members, this is something actually which has gone into the spill at various times, I think, under the chairmanship of Representative Zavina, under the chairmanship of Representative Cranky, I think even under the chairmanship of Representative Seifert. The House is always calling for more, you think that for an organization the size of the House and Senate, we could do with a little less heavy administrative overhead, and that there are many, many firms who have that many employees and that many staff that have less people. So we'd like, again, to at least look at this and come back with a report. You know, we usually send an increase to be much bigger proponents of bicameralism than we are. So we do run into some problems later.
Any comments from members? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Winkler, I have the A5 amendment. Is that your amendment?
That is, Madam Chair. It looks technical. This was heard, Madam Chair, members, this was heard in the Government Operations Committee. It passed. I understand that Dewar is supportive of the amendment. Essentially what it does is permit state employees to have time to leave work to do blood donation, which we all think is a good thing. Or I think we all think that.
Okay, any questions from members?
I guess I would move the A5 amendment.
Oh, I thought you did. Okay, any questions on the amendment? I see none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Kahn, I have the A6 amendment.
Madam Chairman, this is something that we had in our bill last year. And it was actually passed by the House and passed by the Senate in a different bill. It got into an environment conference committee where nobody on the conference committee kind of understood the issue. The bill had three sections. This was the first section, which talked about the reasons for doing this, and it went through at least two legislative committees besides the finance committees, and it was amended every time someone wanted it further worked out, it was, in terms of putting in computations, in terms of grandfathering in any existing ones and so forth. Well, they took it out. It's kind of, and one of the reasons it was in our bill was that we've given the Department of Administration the job to do a model ordinance, which isn't something that people have to adopt. It's just out there for them to look at it. I think the three cities, at least that I know of, that have model ordinance on this subject are Hopkins, Maplewood, and Mankato, I'm pretty sure. And League of Cities said they were willing to work on it. Administration did some work on it. They were held up by getting by the delay in getting something from the national organization in favor of this. This kind of fixes up the statutes, which are a mess right now, because if you look at 16B.328, if you look at it,
you have all these definitions with nothing attached to it. And then after that is the requirement, which the Department of Administration has been working on. So this just puts in the language that already passed both houses and goes before the definitions and makes them make sense. God would be heaven.
Any questions on the bill from members? Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kahn, actually the City of Plymouth has enacted some lighting standards in their city, and one of the concerns that they had was just the overall cost, so they made sure it was only for new construction and things of that nature. Right, but the only question that I have for you, Representative Kahn, is that I see on the back of the bill that it talks about the cost can't be more than 15%, but we're still going to see a cost increase nonetheless. So I'm just wondering if you have a fiscal note on this bill, if you've talked to the different agencies and what kind of impact this would have, and if this has gone through a financial review before.
Representative Kahn.
Again, as I said, we did this last year. By the time we were finished it, it was considered that there was no fiscal impact. Because one of the things that you get is you get a serious energy saving from this. First of all, it only applies to state-funded lights, so it doesn't apply to public lighting throughout it. And one of the reasons is, for example, the City of Calgary has saved 30% on their energy expenditures since they started.
Madam Chair, Representative Kahn, do you have a fiscal note that says that?
I don't have one now. We did have one last year.
Is it possible to get something like that? Get it reviewed?
Yes.
Okay.
You get it before the...
That would be helpful.
Again, before the next.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Mr. Shepard.
Madam Chair, members, I just realized on some of these amendments that they're being inserted into an article of the bill in which all the sections are effective immediately. And this section, it looks, if you look on page 2, line 4, it looks like it's intended to be effective August 1st, 2008. And so I just had a question for the author if you wanted this section to be effective August 1, 08, instead of immediately.
Madam Chairman, I'm not sure it makes any difference. It says that this doesn't apply to the installation of lights after that. I don't know if it makes any difference. It
before work. That, Madam Chair.
What?
Doesn't affect installation lights before that.
Yes.
Okay. Any of Representative Forrest, do you have a question?
Madam Chair, I was just curious in adopting some of these amendments. I know we've had good committee discussion and the like, but are we going to open it up to the floor as well? I don't know if there are folks who want to weigh in either for or against particular amendments, but I know our tradition has been to ask if there's anybody in the audience who wishes to speak for or against a particular legislation.
Anybody in the audience want to speak for or against the A6 amendment? Okay. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Kahn. I know that this is an issue that we've looked at in the past. Could you again refresh my memory on what exactly a cutoff lumen error is and what does 1,800 lumens mean, because it's not described in this section? And then also, do these bulbs contain mercury?
Madam Chairman, Representative Pepin, actually all that is in the definition section, which used to accompany the bill and which is now in statute without any reason for having them. A luminaire is the part of a light that sheds light down. You think of a standard and you think of the thing that's pointing down. That's the luminaire. And I want to say a lumen is the light spread over 1 foot. 1 foot candle worth of light in 1 square foot, but I'm not, you know, I hate to, what? Oh.
Madam Chair, to that point. Well, I was just going to point out, Madam Chair, that I also think that Lumiere was the name of the talking candle on Beauty and the Beast.
That was Lumiere.
Oh, yeah, that Lumiere, whatever. Okay.
Yeah, you're just right.
Forget it then.
Yeah. Right.
Absolutely.
Mr.
Shepard? Madam Chair, you're correct that in the current definition of law, a lumen is a 1 foot candle. One lumen per square foot.
Hey.
As you said.
Pretty good. Not that I see people minded as I come down to the chair. Okay. Any further discussion? Representative Peppin.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Kahn. What about that question about the mercury? Do these bulbs contain mercury?
The bulbs are no different than any other bulbs.
It's just the luminaire
it's
over the top?
The way the light goes down, so it has
okay.
No...
Again, it was the bulbs. So thank
yes.
you.
No.
We had an architect committee. I'd refer it to the architect committee, Madam Chair.
That would be Dean. Yeah.
Okay. All right. We should maybe check in with him first. Is there any other questions or comments from members?
Madam Chairman,
yes.
Before that, when the bill was first introduced, it had kind of smaller standards and it had, more restrictive version. The person who worked on it very carefully was the Department of Nutrition, because most of it was, but we're looking at state funding, most of it would be the Department of Transportation. And so they were, every suggestion that they made was incorporated into it. And since last year, when we didn't do, I don't know if they were planned by then, but the two most offensive, if you want to look at offensive lights that's just incorrect, constructed, go by the uniform. I don't know why they always do these in my district, just to shorten my life. Go by the new university stadium and look at some funny shaped lights going up. And then the worst one is go by on East River Road, something that's called the Science Education Building, and look at the lights around that. And I don't know if they would have fallen under that, but they're particularly irritating to me.
Any further comments from members? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A6 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. The next amendment that I have is the... What's odd? Where did my A7 amendment go? If I don't have the A7 amendment in front of me... Oh, it's right here. Representative Kahn, to your A7 amendment.
I'd like to move the A7 amendment. One of the things that we talked about is that we have the money for the Republican National Convention in our bill, and there has been discussion about what's going to happen when all these people come from all around the country and discover how backward the state of Minnesota is from many places. So this is an attempt. I understand there was a bill to do this that ran into some kind of a backlog, some kind of a buzzsaw or something like that. This is something that's very much more minor, and it also incorporates part of a bill that represented Philip Forrest and I put in about off sales allowed on Sunday. This was just only for the small period of time. So I guess I'd like to move it off in just a minute.
I have a couple questions. Does August 29th to September 8th include a Sunday?
What?
Does it include a Sunday?
Yes.
During that? Okay. All right. I don't have to ask my other question. Representative Tappan.
Madam Chair and Representative Kahn, is it your belief then that Republicans are big, heavy drinkers?
I think they go to.
Madam Chairman,
go ahead.
They probably should be. But it's my belief that is, for example, some of the places that I go to, which are more sophisticated cities, like I just came back from the weekend. Rogers isn't Representative Peppin, I'm very sorry to tell you that Rogers isn't included in this. So you'll not. Maybe it is the off-sale one. Is that? No, sorry. No.
It's included in the list of sophisticated cities.
Right, just like what?
It's included in the list of sophisticated cities, however.
Well, you'd have to expand the amendment to include Rogers. We limited it to just San Diego. Again, trying to limit it just to the convention.
Okay. I believe Representative Lesh, did you have a question first?
No, I did not.
Okay, then Representative De La Force.
Well, thanks, Madam Chair, and I would also note to committee members and for the record that there are also some other control measures in here. Representative Kahn alluded to one on line 10, which puts a geographic limit on the expanded sales, and also on lines 12 and 13, there also is veto authority for the local licensing jurisdiction. So if the local licensing jurisdiction doesn't like this option to expand hours during the Republican National Convention, they certainly can choose not to take advantage of this particular amendment.
Okay. Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, this is to either one of the committee members testifying. Does this take place during the state fair?
Yes.
No further questions.
But Madam Chairman.
Yes, Representative Kahn.
I don't think the state fair is open past.
No.
2 o'clock.
Well, it will be this year.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Blake, I think the bummer is that the gates would be closed, and so you have the beer gardens that might be open but empty.
Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak for or against this amendment? Mm-hmm. Any other questions from the members? Representative Anderson.
Representative Kahn, are we going to be lifting the smoking ban then as well, or
we didn't deal with that?
I think most, Madam Chair,
go ahead.
Again, many places from around the country, even I would stop places like Texas, cities in Texas that done a strong smoking ban before we did. I think even cities and states that used to be known as tobacco states have done that too.
Awesome.
So, any additional questions? Representative Drzkowski.
Madam Chair and Representative Kahn, what were the reasons or what's the rationale behind the 10-mile limitation? I see that as maybe problematic. Maybe people don't know how far away from the decided convention or which part of the convention.
Madam Chairman, the people don't have to know, just the sellers have to know. And we also looked, we were thinking, well, you'd want to include Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Bloomington, and we weren't sure if it includes all of Bloomington, but you notice that it's within a city or township, any part of which is within 10 miles of the site. So again, there's no problem with people not knowing. It doesn't go to regular
numbers. I think they can see why.
Again, that we're being, the two of us are being really conservative on it. So anyone who wants to expand it can look
at it.
Any additional questions from members? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Aye. Motion prevails. The next amendment I have in front of me, Representative Kahn, is the A8 amendment.
Okay. Madam Chairman, this amendment was brought to me by Nate, and there's a person who, this is all trying to last night, so I've done enough in the last 2 days that I should be able to do it to the amendment.
State your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Richard Kajewski, the Legislative Affairs Director with the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees. The concern which brought this bill about is 30% of all state employees are eligible to retire in the next 3 years. 50% of the remaining state employees are eligible for retirement in the following 5 years. Currently, state government salaries are capped at 95% of the governor's salary, while other political subdivisions in this state are limited to a compensation package of 110% of the governor's salary. And in front of a joint hearing on February 6th, Tom Gillespie, the state demographer, did state that the workforce will decline faster in Minnesota than the national average. In the same joint meeting, Tom Simpson, state economist, stated that migration into Minnesota will be less educated. Mr. Gillespie also stated that we can replace the person, not the knowledge. This bill sets the salary limits of agency heads listed in Minnesota Statute 15A at the same level of compensation as those employed by political subdivisions of the state, such as the cities, counties, towns, metropolitans, or regional agencies. Due to stagnant agency head salaries, the state is experiencing salary compression problems right now. Many of the state's upper-level managers and division directors are stuck at a wage right below the agency head. And given the state's need to recruit for managers due to the upcoming turnover and retirements, managers and directors in the very near future, the state needs to relieve compression to allow the state to recruit at a more competitive wage if that's necessary. Secondly, what this bill does is it makes it a policy of the state of Minnesota to establish equitable compensation relationships across all job classes. This bill requires the state to use their own recognized system, which they refer to as the Hay system, for classification analysis, and that is what they use to determine compensation equity in the state currently. They've long used the Hay system to evaluate all state jobs. All job classes do have a Hay rating currently. That's been done in the last 7 years. However, the current statute only requires the state of Minnesota to attempt to establish equitable compensation relationships. It doesn't require the state to establish equitable compensation relationships. The compensation equity would be implemented at a 50% rate each of the next 2 years. Consider that over 70% of all newly hired MAIS employees in the past 2 years have been hired at step 3 of the pay grid or above. Some of the state's current compensation determinations are simply inadequate. And it's certainly a very limited amount, I believe, if I remember right, it's about 223 job classes have individuals who may be affected. And I think the fiscal note had about 1,200 individuals listed in there. The legislation through compensation levels will also help retain knowledgeable workers past their eligible retirement age, save the state money in turnover, ease state recruitment struggles created by large amounts of position vacancies, and benefit agencies by keeping long-term knowledgeable employees longer to help train new employees. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to stand for questions.
Representative Leck.
Thank you. Mr. Gajewski, you said that they affected 220 people. I don't have a copy of the system in front of me. And is that, what kind of the percentage of the total number of workers we're talking about do this with it impacts? And I think it's the 220 people that are currently bumping their heads up against the salary ceiling, is that it?
No, I'm talking about the Hague individuals, the people who are bumping up against the salary heads. I would not have a number on that. The 233 people that I was referring to as the classes that would have people affected, I don't have the actual number of people. It may be, you have it. I'm not sure I have that. Looking at the fiscal notes, I would stand corrected. I was referencing the 233 classes that would be affected, covering, looks like, approximately 1,300 employees.
Okay, so just so I understand, within, say, a year of this being enacted, what percentage of the people that it currently impacts are going to immediately be at the new cap? Do you know that?
Madam Chair and Representative Lesch, this bill allows the state to implement this at a 50% implementation pace for in 2009 and 50% in 2010. How they implement that and which classes they choose from, I would leave that up to the discretion of the state to determine which classes they needed to competitively recruit from more urgently than the others.
And thank you.
Senator Lesch.
Madam Chair, Mr. Gorodreski, I appreciate that, and I understand the discretionary thing, but that's why we have fiscal notes, because somebody makes a stab at it somewhere. So, but I think I got the answer. Thank you.
Question of De La Force.
Well, thanks, Madam Chair, and I appreciate Mr. Kajewski.
Yes.
Did I get that right? Coming to my office and talking about this, and certainly it's the custom and usage to put amendments on various bills, but this, in my opinion, is problematic, not from a public policy perspective. I don't dispute a lot of the points being made, but this is a major change to the state's compensation system, and I'm a little bit troubled that you know, such a major change is being attached onto an omnibus bill. I think that a public policy change like this ought to be vetted through the committee process. You and I serve on the subcommittee on employee relations or some of the other relevant committees like Chair Pawlowski's committee. And so I've got a concern that we may be making major changes to the state's compensation system without fully vetting the situation. Again, this may be good public policy. I'm sympathetic to a lot of the points that are made, but I'm troubled by this being just attached onto an omnibus finance bill.
Madam Chair, members, I would just respond by saying that agency heads have not had an increase since 2001. They're at a rate of pay that is not the cap. They could be increased, and they haven't been had their salaries increased. Fiscal note does not, and the bill does not guarantee them increases, so I can appreciate the comments, but the state's going to recruit, and they are going to enter this window at the end of the session regardless. We've heard from many people. I think last week this committee heard from the state auditor concerned about the number of CPAs in the state of Minnesota. We continue to hear from people who raise points of classifications that are going to be tough to recruit. So I'm sympathetic to it. The Hay Study piece where people are not, their maximum pay scale is not within the Hay Study window, that's a system that's used today. It's used in an overwhelming majority of state job classes. It's just been a piece where the state has at times said that we don't have to adhere to it, so we're not going to. And that's been a concern of ours. And it doesn't, it just makes sure that the top of the 12-step scale is within that window, not the bottom, the top.
Representative Horton.
Thank you. I have a question of whether this applies to all of the agencies. I'm concerned about the Department of Transportation. We have district engineers that are getting offers for 50% pay increases, and we're not going to be able to retain people that we need in the Department of Transportation if we don't alter that compression thing. So I'm not sure if this amendment would help with that problem we have at MnDOT.
Madam Chair and Representative Portman, this applies to all state employees. I can't I can certainly tell you after committee whether or not the engineers are paid according to the window in which they're paid in. I don't have that with me, obviously, for all 1,200 job classes. Take me a few minutes to rifle through any. But I could certainly get back to you on that. This would apply to all job classes. All of the job classes in the state are currently hay rated, so it would apply.
Thank you.
Any other questions from members? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kahn, in looking over this, I mean, this is going to impact our overall spreadsheet, and I'm just wondering where the money is going to come from.
Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman, in this one, it's just clear that when we don't give any money to something, the agency absorbs it, and since it's at the discretion of the agency, there's no requirement to fund it. And we did distribute
yes.
A fiscal note. So it is something that's within the ability of any agency to do, should they choose it, but it's their choice to choose it or not.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Kahn, because I've served on a couple other committees with you, we've had discussions about different things that state agencies can absorb. And the list of absorption is getting longer and longer. And I'm just wondering if there's anybody out there that's starting to tabulate how much these agencies are going to absorb and if we are really being realistic about our expectations.
Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman, first of all, again, this is not, that may be a problem when it's a mandate. This is totally discretionary. So the agency makes the decision about whether they're going to do this without, and how to do it. And again, I can't answer that question in general. Again, we can ask the general question if there's anyone in the audience who has problems with this or.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Kahn, I'm just, you know, curious because you say it's optional, but I can just imagine being in a state agency where you have one agency that grants it and then the other agency that doesn't. I mean, that makes the problem that, I forgot his name, the NAEP representative described even worse.
Madam Chair, Representative, the implementation of making sure that all job classes, that their maximum salary and the pay scale is within that hay window, is required within 2009 and 2010. The state agency headpiece is an option that still goes through the approval process of the LCC and the governor or a proper appointing authority. So I think you're right. I guess my position in, on it is I continue to watch budgets. There has been a hiring freeze. There's been a letter from the governor about a year and a half ago asking agencies, even when there was a surplus, to you know, make any staff cuts that were in excess or that they could do without. It's a $5.5 billion biennial budget for staffing, and I think that there certainly is salary savings to pay for some of this. And my other point, I guess, would be is that when the retirements start happening, we're removing people from the workforce who are making top scale pay and hiring them in at, you know, step 1, 2, 3, 4, somewhere around there. So there will be at least an initial savings for many years before they get up to that top piece.
Is there anybody in the audience who would like to testify in favor or opposed to the bill? In opposition to the bill? Okay. Any other questions for members? Seeing none, all those in
favor?
Representative Penn. Maybe this might be a question for staff, Madam Chair. I'm not sure. What I'm curious about is if someone could educate me, perhaps, on what our policy is for high-ranking employees as it relates to golden parachutes. And I'll give you an example of what my interest is. When the Minneapolis Teachers Retirement Fund was absorbed into TRA. The director of the Minnesota Teachers Pension received a rather large, to me, offensively large golden parachute. And so I guess I'm wondering if staff could educate me as to what, if we have a policy, and if we do have a policy, would this, how would this change, adding these additional groups, change our golden parachute policy if we have one?
Madam Chair.
How is that determined?
I just asked Representative View the Forest how much it was. I wasn't aware of it, but my response would be is that they too would be governed by this statute that would, in a sense, change their salary cap to 110% of their entire salary package. Can't exceed 110% of what the governor's salary is. There is a built-in inflationary measure in there, but I'm not sure what you're calling a significant increase, but I'm not aware of that. I know that the retirement systems would also be applicable under the statute unless Mr. Shepard sees differently, but that certainly was the intent.
Well,
Representative Pepin?
Yeah, I think my recollection on the former chair of that was, I think her golden parachute was, I want to say, in the neighborhood of $400,000, and so I'm not really clear as to what that was based at. And so I guess my in addition to the previous question would be the 110% cap, would that include a golden parachute then, or is that not inclusive of that?
Representative Kahn, I don't think that was clearly done with special legislation. I don't think we have anything like that in the state compensation system, and I don't think we have anything like that in the retirement boards that are subject to the state compensation system. But that was special legislation that specifically did that.
Madam Chair and members, just on Representative Tepin's general question about severance pay for highly compensated state employees, there's a law that states that, with limited exception, severance pay for a highly compensated employee is defined as somebody who gets paid more than 60% of the governor's, cannot exceed an amount equivalent to 6 months of pay. And that there's a definition of severance pay that says that it doesn't include, for example, an early retirement incentive offer that is made available generally to all employees in the appointing authority, and it also doesn't include payments for accumulated vacation and sick leave, things like that. That is, and I believe in Chapter 471 in the FOSA, there's a simpler limit for local government employees. I'm not familiar offhand with how the Minneapolis teachers person would have been paid
a higher amount. It may be that they are not considered within the purview of that chapter 465 or 471, whichever it is, that is for the local employees.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I just came to mind with Representative Pepin's question. And perhaps Ms. Roberts can answer this question. So with the high fives then being boosted up because the cap is lifted, does the fiscal note include those costs as well? Or?
Madam Chair, I can answer. I do have a letter, and I'd be happy to provide it to you, following committee, from Dave Bergstrom, the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Retirement System, saying there'll be no impact on the retirement system, and he explains that process.
Can you just give me this, excuse me, I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Can you just explain to me how that wouldn't be impacted? If the high five, then
yep.
Obviously it's going to be higher. So how is it that it would not impact the retirement?
Sure.
The cost of that?
He explained. And
I'm going to put you on the spot.
No, I understand.
But
that's fine. He certainly has more knowledge than I do. Dave Bergstrom explained it as though this cost would be offset by the people who contribute to the retirement system and then people being hired in. The amount of time that they pay in would clearly offset the amount of payment going out. For the small, it's a very minimal increase for people who raise their high five for another, let's say, year or 2 years. It's very minimal and is offset by people who participate in the retirement system for a lengthy period of time. The average state employee being hired right now, I think, is about 35 years of age. And I think that's how it was calculated, but I certainly will get you that.
Okay.
Follow-up question, Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, thank you for that. Does that also include, does that just assume then that the hiring freeze will be lifted, or does that take into account that we have a hiring freeze on right now?
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, I don't know that that would be impacted, but I would have to ask Executive Director Bergstrom.
Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman, Representative, I just point out that we kind of have a pretty flexible hiring freeze. Anyone who's necessary can be replaced and so forth. So it's not a real hardcore freeze, sort of a fluffy one.
Chairman Duskowski.
Madam Chair, Representative Kahn, I guess I'm just troubled by the fact that we've got a deficit situation here, and we're looking at a fiscal note of, what, $7 or $8 million. Are any of these positions going unfilled?
Now I'm trying to explain sort of the summary level information on the fiscal note. I haven't had a chance to really read this one. I think if we get into too much detail, we can prepare it to explain it. But on the first page, what these numbers represent are the estimated impact to the general fund and all other funds. For fiscal year 2009, the total estimated impact for all funds combined is $968,000, and I think this represents sort of the phased-in approach. $310,000 of that would be the general fund cost, and again, there is language in the bill that requires these costs be absorbed through agency appropriations. The cost increases each year in from 10 to 11. The total in fiscal year 2010 we estimated at $2.8 million for all funds, with $900,000 of that being general fund cost. And then in fiscal year 11, $3.7 million for all funds. And I think that Dewar usually has a calculation on how they allocate between the general fund and other funds based on, they look at the state payroll expenditures and how much it's allocated. So I assume that this allocation represents that.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I guess I'm not really sure exactly what the fiscal impact is. It's definitely substantial. It really flies in the face of what this type of policy, what at least the people I represent would recognize the common sense at a time when we're struggling financially to be Clean Flame Salary. Question I have, are there any of these positions that are going unfilled because we're not paying them enough?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think in some of my opening comments I referenced in the last 2 years the average, at least MAPE employee who's been hired, is being hired at step three or above in the wage scale, including many who are hired at the very top. Maybe you have other definitions, or other people may have other definitions as to why that is, but in fact, we hear story after story about agencies and from people who are doing the hiring of having a difficult time recruiting people to those positions who are actually qualified and show up as qualified in their hiring system.
We'll finish questions, and then the state auditor wanted to chime in on this. Representative De La Force.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Drzewski, I just point out that you're not alone. If you look at page 4 of the note, essentially the person who crafted the note says it's impossible to determine the true long-term cost other than to conclude that they will exist. And again, this will be my last comment, that I don't think we have to be adopting this amendment or this type of public policy change in this manner. This needs to be a bill, and obviously if you look at the fiscal note, it was a bill introduced by Representative Simon that for some reason didn't get a hearing. I don't know what that reason is. But again, as you know, when you have a bill up for a hearing, it has wide publication, notice to put out there to the various interested parties so that they can testify. Again, I don't know if this is a good or a bad idea. There are a lot of elements to what Mace says that are true, but to adopt this kind of public policy change in a fashion, I think is wrong.
Okay. State Auditor Otto. Madam Auditor, I like your haircut.
Oh, thank you. Madam Chair, I thought I was looking a little bit too much like the governor. I had a lot going on back here. So
I had to talk to him at hockey about
this. Yeah. Madam Chair, okay, and number two. I don't want to say whether this is a good thing to do right now or not. What I do want to say is being a state auditor and having staff and working with people that are highly recruited in other areas, and there's going to be a shortage of, let's say, auditors and CPAs out there. I think what this does for some of the members that have asked some really good questions is, as either an agency or an independent office, it gives you tools in your tool bag, and you realize it's still living within a budget. Now, sometimes there may be a major shift because we have demographic changes. We have, we're going to have less educated folks that we need, and we still need to function in government. We want to do it really well when we do it, right? So sometimes you may have a position that you can't lose that person, and if you did, it would take 4 people to try to replace what you lose. So sometimes actually there's a cost. The cost-benefit analysis, you come out much better if you can hang on to someone a little bit longer to make a transition. So I think it's about efficiency in government and making sure we can, over the next 10 years, be successful. And I don't know if this is the right time, but I want you to know in our office, we struggle too sometimes. And we get folks stolen by local government. So anyway, it's just something. I think what it does is it allows government to at least have a few more tools in their tool bag. But people also realize budgets are tight. So.
Any other questions before we can move along on the amendment? Representative Kahn and then Representative Zukowski, and then I think we should vote on the amendment.
No, Madam Chairman, one of the specific reasons for doing amendment, you know, to not have come in with all of these in a base budget, in a base bill with some chairs, we do in this case, was specifically to make sure that any amendments which had not been aired before our committee and had not been passed, you know, at a previous time and so forth, was open to a vote of the committee. So the amendment is before us, and we can, and it's before the committee to vote as the committee sees. I obviously intend to vote yes. So.
Madam Chair, thank you. I just would like to express my opposition to this amendment. The governor's salary, as I understand, is $120,000 a year. Is that correct?
Yes, as I understand it.
$120,000 a year. So 95% of that's worth $110,000 on 114. That's a lot of money where I come from. And our families don't have many pool left there, no pool water anymore.
Roll call being called. Any other questions, comments?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I know we've talked about this for a pretty long time,
yes.
But I really think it's important to understand that there are professionals who are compensated in the private sector at a higher level. And one area is civil engineers in the transportation area. And we will not be able to attract and retain professionals at MnDOT if we don't take this step.
They're also important to remember that this comes out of the department and they have a budget to run. They're each own department, you know, each own budget to run. So with that, the clerk will take the roll and the chair votes aye. No, I think the roll.
Okay, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Representative Kahn.
Aye.
Representative Ward.
Yes.
Representative De La Forest.
No.
Representative Anderson.
No.
Representative Bigham.
Aye.
Representative Drakowski.
No.
Representative Hilty. Representative Hortman.
Yes.
Representative Lesh.
Aye.
Representative Pippin.
No.
Representative Poppy.
No.
Representative Winkler.
Aye.
Representative Zellers. Representative Carlson. Representative Pulowski. Okay.
It passes. And I apologize, that's how Representative Mullery does it in his committee, which is where I do most of the vote work. Sorry. Anyway, next amendment I have in front of me is the A-10 amendment. I do not know who the author is on this. And it was handed out after the committee started. Could you get us a couple of copies, please?
Alright,
Representative Forrest moves the A-10 amendment, and would you like to explain your amendment?
Madam Chair, this committee certainly is no stranger to the whole issue of debating the governor's appointees and assistant commissioners and the like. And unless the governor's position has changed, and I don't think it has, he won't sign a bill that contains similar language. So I'm moving this amendment in the hopes of trying to get the bill in the shape in which hopefully the governor will sign it. Of course, I'm not in a position to vouch for the entire bill, but I know that certainly he's had opposition to this in the past.
Representative Rex.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I understand your efforts and you're trying to do Representative Taylor for us, but I oppose it. And in light of that, I kind of want to know where we are, so I'd ask for a roll call on it, I'm sure.
Okay, roll call being requested. Any further discussion? Representative Horton.
I'm sorry if I missed the beginning part of Representative DeForest. What does your amendment do?
This would remove page 17 and section 23. Those are the mandatory cuts to the governor's office.
Thank you.
Representative Kahn.
I point out that it's not to the governor's, it's to the executive. It is to the executive branch. I would point out that there is a large amount of discretion. As I said, we had this item in our bill last year, and yes, it's true, but the governor, I should have brought the ode that the governor, that our staff wrote to the governor's veto message. The governor objected to a lot of things in the bill. And I will point out that the governor, as opposed to the current position on this sometimes, which has specifically named particular people, this gives the governor a lot of discretion between how he wants to remove what are essentially political appointees. And I've made this position fairly often. You know, when we're in tough budget times and we're making cuts, it's what's known as the kind of cup of coffee, and the people who fire people don't like to fire the people whom they share a cup of coffee with. And if you think of state government as being pyramidical, that means that they preferentially fire the people at the bottom of that pyramid instead of the people who are making higher salaries at the top of the pyramid. So I think, again, if we're, as we have some questions, pulling in our belts and making some decisions, this gives the governor a lot of flexibility to make those decisions and, you know, to be fiscally responsible. I didn't book any savings in this bill from doing this, so there is a lot of provision discretion as to how much of it will be done, and we'll see what the governor's comments are or what the Senate's comments are.
Representative Kahn, so that I have a better understanding of this, I'm not sure how to ask the question exactly, but what I'm trying to get at is, I'm wondering what the number of employees is versus the number of commissioners is. For example, I don't know if there's anybody from the Department of Human Services there, but I'm wondering how many employees in the Department of Human Services versus how many assistant commissioners, just so I get another example. If we have any sort of information, I know it would be hard for staff to probably go through all the agencies and figure out how many assistant and deputy commissioners versus how many total employees, but I think it would be helpful to get an understanding of what kind of percentage it is of the total budget.
Mrs. Goodall, you don't happen to know that?
I'm afraid I don't have it with me.
Okay. Do you have an estimate for
that? Madam Chair, members, Jared Goodall, Department of Employee Relations. The House, the Senate has language that is a bit different. As Representative Kahn said, the Senate allows, I believe, all the agencies to have one deputy commissioner and no assistant commissioners. They said that I think they were tracking 38 assistant commissioners and about 10 deputy commissioners. And of those 10 deputy commissioners, I believe three of those positions are currently filled. And they were banking a savings of about $3.6 million with respect to that. As Representative Kahn said, the House language is more all-encompassing to include unclassified, and but it does have that discretion to cut 25%. And as Representative Kahn said, there's no money bank. As Representative De La Forest said, the governor is obviously opposed to this provision and has been in the past.
Representative Peck.
Madam Chair and Mr. Jordahl, you mentioned 38 assistant commissioners.
I believe that's the number that I...
And three deputy commissioners, that's in all state agencies?
Yes.
Okay, and could you know the number of total employees in all state agencies?
The executive branch, we track approximately 37,000 state employees. If you include MNSCU, the number runs to 50,000.
Okay, thank you. I guess I would be opposed to it. I think if you compare, I didn't figure out the math on it, but if you compare this to a private sector job, I think you have to have enough teeth to be able to manage the Indians, to use an old saying. I just think that the governor needs some flexibility with his staff to be able to manage his employees. So I would be opposed to this amendment.
Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman, I'll point out that with the broader language that we use, this goes much beyond, the flexibility goes much beyond just deputies and assistants, I believe. Yeah.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kahn, I'm just curious. When we have a new governor in place, does this impact how many people that they can hire? Or is this just limited to this governor's administration? The way I read it, it seems like it's only limited to this governor's administration.
That would be, Representative Anderson, that would be dependent on the budget that would be before us at the time of a new administration.
So you are saying that it's limited to this governor's administration?
I think it's limited to this budget. Am I?
Representative Kahn?
I guess I'd like to ask you the marker. Ellen can talk about
how it's structured. Madam Chair, members, I don't think it's clear as written. The bill says that the governor must reduce which sort of implies that occurs once. And then the last sentence says the reduction must be achieved by June 30th, 2009. It doesn't clearly address what would happen after that time.
Madam Chair,
follow-up?
Yes, Mr. Shepherd, thank you for that explanation. Representative Kahn, I just think it's interesting that it's, you know, as I read it, and my interpretation would be, unless you get greater clarification, clarifying language on this, that this would be limited to this governor's administration. And that seems opportunistic to just limit it to this one administration. If we're truly looking at government reform, wouldn't you make it for the future and on out?
No.
I mean, if you, under your argument, you're saying there's not a need for these people, so why would there be a need for these people down the road?
Madam Chairman, that wasn't quite the argument I made. The argument I made is that we never like to cut budgets. We like to set them right the first time, and then say, well, we're cutting budgets, and probably cutting positions as we cut budgets. The tendency is to cut the people off at the bottom and leave the people off at the top. And this is an attempt to kind of level the playing field. Before another governor, in fact, while this governor is still here, we'll have a whole other budget session. And should this pass into law, we could certainly revisit that in the next budget season. Session was determined that it was that the governor wanted to bring back these people, and then we'll certainly have either the same governor with a new administration after 2010 or a new governor.
Madam Chair, Representative Kahn, thank you for that. I apologize for attributing those comments to you. I know that there were other members that spoke of that issue, that this is for the good of the order of government reform. So I appreciate your comments on that. Thank you.
Okay, if there's no other comments from members, is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify for or against this amendment? I see none. All those in favor of the
roll call.
Clerk will take the roll.
Representative Kahn?
No.
Representative Ward?
No.
Representative De La Forest?
Yes.
Representative Anderson?
Yes.
Representative Bigham?
No.
Representative Jurkowski?
Yes.
Representative Hilty? Representative Hortman?
No.
Representative Lesh?
Nay.
Representative Tippin?
Yes.
Tippin, thank you. Representative Poppy?
No.
Representative Winkler?
No.
Representative Zellers?
Four to seven fails. Does not prevail, sorry. The next amendment in front of me is the A11 amendment, and that would be Representative Kahn.
Yeah.
A11.
Yes.
Madam Chairman and members, I thought we had taken care of this before, and I think I had some. This is this whole, and the person who just got hit with this was Representative Leader, who was given a plaque from someplace, municipalities or something like that, and suddenly the campaign finance board came down on him and made him pay the value of the plaque. I had said, apparently, the ones I've been given are never significant enough for them to go after me. What I was going to do, if they ever came after me, was I was going to load them all in a box and bring them to them and say, here, you may have them, and I really want to see them displayed in the campaign finance lab. But I think I think that none of us do things, behave badly because we expect to get a plaque or similar memento. I think that this language is okay. If anyone wants to make sure that these have to be less than $50,000, less than 50, if anyone thinks that people are going to start doing solid gold plaques and mementos and want a dollar figure put on that, I don't know. You know, I think we all get these, and I think any discussion to the amendment? Anybody would like to testify in support or in opposition to the amendment?
Madam Chair, wondering if you'd given any thought to maybe changing that number 5, the trinket or memento, if you thought of raising that up at all. I'm still burned about my cup from the credit union a couple of years ago that they confiscated from me.
What was that called? What is that?
I don't know, but they confiscated it.
If anyone wants to suggest the, I don't know when we put the $5. I don't know when we put the five. I'll accept any number that anyone would like to. Representative Petra.
I would make an oral amendment to increase that to $10.
Sure.
I'll accept that.
I will amend my amendment to fifteen then.
Okay. I was just gonna see if you were gonna accept that as friendly.
Yes,
amendment.
I accept it as a friendly.
Okay, so it's 15 right now, Representative Horton. Madam Chair,
I don't think we should change this. I know that the these reforms were very. I mean, not the Kahn amendment, but the Pepin amendment to the Kahn amendment. These reforms, I know, were debated ad nauseum at some time before I arrived in the legislature and were the subject of great controversy. And I just think the perception that the public has is that you can curry favor with elected officials some way, somehow, and the pretty strict campaign finance laws we have in Minnesota help us to convey to the public that our opinions are not for sale. So I think changing it from $6 to $15, I know it's like much ado about nothing, but it sends a message that I'm not comfortable with.
Well, with that in mind, instead of accepting it as a friendly amendment, I'll let us vote on it, and I'm going to vote yes. I'm going to vote to increase it to $15.
Okay. Representative Winkler.
Just, Madam Chair, to respond to Representative Portman, I don't think public confidence in our ethics has increased one whit. Any of these ethics reforms.
Okay, if there's any further discussion on the Pepin Amendment, anybody want to speak for or against? I shouldn't probably ask the crowd because that's a lot of lobbyists in there. all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Aye. Motion to bill. To the amendment. Any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Aye. Motion to bill. The next amendment that I have in front of me is the A-12 amendment, and that is Representative Kahn. Oh, this is something that I think, this is the taxes of fee language, which we actually passed. We passed it in our bill. It was passed once in the conference committee. I don't think it was one of the things that the governor objected to in the bill. I think he thought it was pretty much okay. Language was put in one of those unholy, people used to say that the creepy alliance was unholy, but I'll tell you the creepy Pogamilla alliance was even worse. And this was actually accepted by the conferees and the state government finance committee in the Senate until Senator Pogamilla saw it and, I don't know, got it out somehow. Through a fit, I was going to say, but I don't know what happens in the Senate when they do it. So I think we ought to take a try. One of the things that's most offensive about this is that the Senate insisted on keeping this language, and the Senate sends none of their appropriations bills that have fees in it to their tax committee, and the House sends all of our appropriations bills that have fees in it to the tax committee. So I'd like to take a chance shot at getting rid of this again.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Kahn, since you're at the table, I feel that I need to play your role. In government operations, you're always asking for the language of the repealer, and I notice that in our packets we don't have it.
You are absolutely right. I think I described it, but you're totally right. I stand corrected, and I apologize.
But I just felt I had to do it for you. So
thank you. I appreciate it.
Me
I appreciate being a... Madam Chairman, I appreciate being a model for so discerning a member as Representative Anderson.
Any other comments while Representative Anderson looks at the language and possibly has another question?
We never said you were.
Representative
Horton. I'm sorry again for not paying closer attention at the beginning of what you were saying, but why is it that you are proposing to repeal this definition, the tax fee thing?
Because I don't think it makes any sense. I think it's tax. A fee, they may have the same effect, but a fee is not a tax. And the thing, as I said, we did it, I think, without any, I don't know that we had any comment. In fact, I think since we had fees in our bill, it went to the tax committee, and it was kept in on a pretty solid vote of the tax committee. And I said it was accepted by the Senate conferees until the head honcho thought and insisted it come out. And as I said, what's most obnoxious about it is the fact that the House obeys it, and the Senate doesn't obey it, but the Senate insists on keeping it in. So it's another hoop that we have to jump through, of which we have a lot of them anyway.
Questions from members? Anybody else in the audience would like to testify for or against the A-12 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
No.
Motion prevails. Next amendment on in front of me is the A-13 amendment, and that is a con.
Madam Chairman,
yes.
This the person who's the expert on this is former representative, now assistant of death, one of the assistants or deputies, I hope we keep Jim Rose. So I'd like to call him to.
Yeah,
I'd like to move it.
Okay, so you're moving the A-13 amendment.
I'll move the
A-13
amendment, but I would like to yield to former Representative Rose. To
actually not approaching the table.
Okay.
I was looking at him if there was anybody on your on the De La Force amendment, if there was anybody I wanted to speak in favor or opposed to it, but he didn't come up to the table.
No, Jeremiah.
He knows me close.
I know.
I got rid of him.
I know. The road is good.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, my name is Wayne Lefosky. I'm the Director for Real Estate and Construction Services for the Department of Administration. What this bill would do is essentially in 2004, prior to 2004, the Department of Administration and Department of Natural Resources both had a shared statute in under Minnesota Statute 94 for the sale of surplus real estate. What this provision does, and first of all, there's many state agencies that have authority to sell surplus real estate. This provision, or this bill, applies to the Department of Administration's authority. And essentially what it would do is mirror the change that was made in 2004 to DNR's statute and process for selling surplus real estate. And it essentially streamlines the process. It makes it more efficient. And it, while still retaining what we think are the most important steps in the process. And I'd be happy to go through, if you'd like me to do it by section, Madam Chair, and whatever the preference of the committee would be.
Can leave it up to the will of the committee. Do
anybody
people want to go through?
Any opposition.
Okay, the chair and the Republican League both are agreeing to move it along, so.
Madam Chair, if I could ask Mr. Shepard just a technical question. We did make a change on the Senate side.
Okay.
Related to our numbering on the bill. We are deleting 16B.285, or repealing that section. And so we did some renumbering, and I don't think it's actually worked out. So what we ended up doing was deleting Section 1. And so we're leaving 16B.286 and 16B.287 in place. And
Mr. Shepard, you can respond.
Madam Chair, remember, if I understand the witness's testimony correctly, there's some statutes that are going to be left in place, and so would you delete from this amendment what is Section 16 of the amendment? I don't need that. This is my understanding. You don't need that section anymore because the cross-reference doesn't need to change.
Madam Chair, Mr. Shepard, actually, the delete subdivision 1, which is lines 15 through 111, where we're just changing the number and the back references. And then under one other place. So under section 20, under line, the page 4, line 419, we have changed that to 16B285, and that should just need to be remove that reference, and then it should just be 16B286 page in place.
Madam Chair, members, I think what would happen is that all of what is now labeled section 16 in this amendment would be deleted. Wouldn't need that whole section anymore, and then there would be the one other change that was just mentioned on page 4, line 19, to delete the new language and reinstate the 16.28. And then that would be the amendment.
Okay, I'll incorporate that into the amendment.
Okay. The author incorporates that into the amendment, and there is a question from Representative White.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question for the testifier in the department is, does this impact only unimproved property, and if not, how does it affect differently, if at all, property that has some asset that's been bonded?
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, it doesn't include both land and improvements, so it does apply whether it's an approved property or just spare land. The statute related to 16A695, which is our bond finance property, statute still applies to. So all the requirements related to the sale of bond finance property are not changed by this.
Follow-up question, Mr. Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at this, Mr. Waskowski, is that correct?
Waslowski.
I don't call them that out because I can't pronounce them here. I'm looking at page 3, and I'm looking at the section on the public sale requirements. And I see that advertisements in the newspapers have been deleted out from there. Is there just not a need for notice, or can you just describe the reason for that part being deleted?
Madam Chair, Representative, what we previously had is there was a requirement for us to advertise for 4 consecutive weeks. So we had actually placed 4 ads in the paper. So it does change it to bring it down to 1 advertisement, and then there's 30 days that have to fall from us advertising to when we can have the bid process. What we are finding is technology is really replacing our need to advertise 4 times. We're getting a lot of hits when we always post our properties for sale on our website, and just recently we've been able to measure how many hits we're getting, and we're getting close to 1,000 hits when we advertise properties for sale. Our typical post, though, is depending on the type of property. If it's just a single family home, the street department and human services will just advertise locally. If it's a much larger property, then we'll advertise regionally or even nationally.
Follow-up question, Representative Anderson?
I think that's it for now. Thank
you. Okay. Representative Corcoran, okay, you had a question. No? All right, any other questions? Anybody in the audience want to testify in favor or in opposition to this bill?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Are you talking about the amendment?
Yes, the amendment. I'm sorry. Amendment. I misspoke. Rookie mistake. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Representative Anderson?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I'm looking at that same section again, and it talks about that it deletes the language that says that the property should be sold separately. And so is my understanding that if you have a big group of properties, you could lump them all together and sell them to one person, one buyer?
Madam Chair, Representative, that's true, and really where that language was quite vague is a good example of our Department of Human Services Regional Treatment Center campuses, where we, if you looked at a plat, we would have multiple, considered what would be multiple tracts of property, but really it's one property. It didn't seem to fit with the types of properties that we were selling.
Okay, thank you. Okay. All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The next amendment that we have in front of us is the A14 amendment, which is the Kahn amendment. Representative Kahn, to your amendment. Okay. Well, this is something that we had in our bill last year. Again, Representative Philippos pointed out that the governor did object to it. Of course, he's changed the language. There's language in this bill, and that it's only granted leave to care for any significant other, and it's only and it's unpaid leave, so it has no fiscal impact. And I do recall at the point we were doing it, this was the language that was suggested by Representative Emmer, so I always kind of referred to this as the Emmer, when it was going through public safety, and I made the mistake of not, when Representative Emmer, I made the terrible mistake of when Representative Emmer suggested this amendment, not just accepting it, and didn't understand how far-thinking Representative Emmer was
here
on this. Much far out of the box Representative Emmer was on this issue and not just agreeing it. So again, you know, you're right, Representative Philpott, who may have some problems with it. There may be, you know, I think we're going to have a vote here, and I don't know what the vote will be here. And I'm sorry, I thought I had sent you everyone, but maybe I missed this one. And, you know, we will obviously be discussion of this on the... You know, as it goes through the process, and I expect Representative Emmer's support, but never can be.
Any discussion on it?
Oh, you want to say a couple words? Okay, go ahead.
And Madam Chair, and we all know the status of this and who supports it, I think, and who doesn't, but as one who is leaving, if I may impart just a little bit of advice, especially to someone who sits on the subcommittee for employee relations,
Jeff, it seems the system for paid time off. That way the employees can take time off and it's none of the employer's business, even when the state's the employer. Folks, one thing I've been pushing, it's an issue that's going to survive my time here, but for those of you who are staying, just do a bill and convert it all to paid time off. Then you won't believe the amount of resources the state expends and the unions expend over these fights of, he wasn't really sick.
Yep.
It really wasn't her grandmother. It was her cousin, but she was close to the cousin and treated her like a grand. Whatever the case may be. So it's just like these sense. I you know, of course I don't support this. I'm just saying, folks, get rid of the whole issue and go to paid time off. And that way, if state employee acts, if it fits the agency's mission to let that person off work for 3 days or 5 days or whatever, then they can go visit that sick relative or sit home and eat Cheetos. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, honestly, yeah, I bet the fiscal note shows significant savings. Please, do it.
And Mr. Huebinger is in the audience, so we can bring that up at our subcommittee meeting, maybe tomorrow, but you're not going to be there, so maybe we'll wait till something later this fall and bring it up. Any other questions, comments from Representative Wood?
Madam Chair, this is for Mr. Shepherd. Does this amendment work as the author of the original bill intended? We had a discussion about this at one point. I wanted to...
Madam Chair and Representative Winkler, this Representative Kahn's amendment is different, it's just a different idea and a different direction than a bill that the committee heard Representative Walker present earlier, just a few weeks ago, a couple of weeks ago. It's a different approach.
Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kahn, speaking of Representative Walker, when she was here and spoke about her bill, her comments were that her bill would be a cost savings because people wouldn't be taking sick leave. But under this, and also the whole issue of having to fill in for people when they're gone, so I'm wondering, you know, this obviously is going to create a hole because people will be gone. What is the cost to the state when people take this leave and other employees have to fill in the gap?
Perhaps
the Department of Employee Relations could speak to that issue too.
I will let Mr. Jordan say it, but okay.
Madam Chair, members, Jared Jordan again, the Department of Employee Relations. It looks like my day here, more or less.
Yes.
Representative Anderson, I'm afraid I don't. The initial concern is precisely what you raise, and it's very similar to the blood leave donation amendment that went on a bit ago. The state does operate what we call 24/7 facilities that have to be staffed continuously, and so we do, with the blood donation leave, we wanted people to give 14 days notice before taking leave like that, because there is an initial concern of staffing, as there is with this bill. So that is the preliminary thought. In terms, it's been a bit since I've looked at the fiscal note, but primarily our concern initially would be 24/7 facilities.
Okay. Anybody in the audience want to testify for or against the bill? Amendment. Madam Chair, I will point out that, of course, this kind of thing, you know, the blood donation is something that can be more easily planned than this isn't, and I think, we do have this ability for other people, don't we? We do have this ability for spouses, children, etc.
Yes, we do.
So we already have this. This language is already in place for other. Will probably let the majority of state employees with.
Okay. See no further discussion? Senator Duskowski?
Madam Chair, I'm Representative Kahn, 1.5 on the amendment. An employee must be granted leave to the extent the employee's attendance is necessary. The employee's attendance at their employment or at their significant others or wherever they're going.
Representative Kahn, I think it is necessary to care for the significant other.
Okay.
So
it's okay. Thank you.
Remember, I will point out that this is unpaid leave, so there is a problem in people taking it. And again, you know, I'm going to take what Representative Bill Farr said to heart. Both him and Representative Walker leave us. Someone on this committee to take that issue.
As the Vice Chair of the Subcommittee on Employee Relations, we can take that up at some point. I echo your concerns.
Okay. One additional point is just the language about whether or not it's covered by a collective bargaining agreement. As with the majority of bills of this type, extending sick leave or retracting benefits or whatever, we feel this is an issue for collective bargaining, is our position at Stewart.
The problem that we had with that is that it was once negotiated in the collective bargaining agreement, and then the governor came back and said that the legislature had to repeal it. So I would be more sympathetic to that argument if it hadn't once been negotiated and then repealed by law. So obviously the only way to allow it is to put it in by law.
Okay. Seeing no further discussion on the matter, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Next amendment I have in front of me is the A-15 amendment, which is the economist. A15, yes. The Secretary of State technical cleanup lighting.
Oh, okay. Neither of us need to have it.
Oh, Mr. Shackleton, they need a copy of the A15. Okay.
Right.
Oh, you got it. Right. Thank you.
Okay, and this is apparently from the Secretary of State. Yes.
Madam Chair, my name is Beth Fraser. I'm with the Office of the Secretary of State. The A15 amendment amends the section of the bill that has to do with the fee waiver for people who fail to file their annual business renewal because they were serving the country. This bill the committee has heard twice and is now included in this section. It's a technical amendment. Making the section effective the day following final enactment, which the committee actually did at the hearing, and clarifying that people are eligible for the fee waiver if they fail to file their renewal after January 1st, 2007. So just trying to be clear about what period of time we're talking about.
Okay. Any questions from members? Okay. Seeing none, anybody in the audience like to testify for or against the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same side. Motion please. Great. All right. The next amendment we have is the A16 amendment, and that is a Representative Kahn amendment as well.
Madam Chairman and members, this amendment came to me from Representative Solberg, who was given to it by Representative Lanning. Apparently, I guess we haven't paid their dues and so forth with it. There's no appropriation. This comes from the legislative budget.
Yeah.
Apparently, I guess Representative Lanning is one of the members of this. I don't remember who the others are. I know I'm not.
Representative De La Force.
Madam Chair and Representative Kahn, just curious, it looks in meeting with some of our counterparts from contiguous jurisdictions, is this a regular meeting that takes place in one of these jurisdictions, or are we voting for the Honolulu meeting of these groups? Are we talking about expenses to Fargo or expenses to West Palm Beach?
Madam Chairman, we didn't have Representative Lanning here to explain it. We can make sure he explains it on the floor of the House. I pretty much think it's Fargo or Winnipeg, which is a super city, by the way.
Representative Ward.
I think I can add some light to this. There's a coordinating convention this summer on July 13th to 16th in Rapid City, South Dakota, with these entities.
It's pretty warm there.
July 13th and July 16th, yep.
Any other questions, discussion to the amendment?
Madam Chair.
Representative Horton.
Representative Kahn, we have some problem with getting these expenses paid under our current procedures. Is that my understanding of your conversation or your introduction of the amendment was Representative Lanning asked Representative Solberg, who asked you to offer this amendment. So apparently Representative Lanning asked for reimbursement and wasn't reimbursed on something?
I don't know. Madam Chairman, Representative Corbin, I don't think so. I think we haven't paid our dues to the organization or something more fundamental than that, something like that instead.
Yes. Yeah. Mr. Beebe.
So, Madam Chair, members, I'm Greg Gibbinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. This $10,000 fee is for the dues for the organization, not for reimbursement of members attending the meetings. And as has been indicated, meetings have all been in North and South Dakota or Manitoba, or in 2 years, I think it's going to be in St. Paul. In the past, these fees have been paid out of current appropriations split by the House and the Senate and the LTC. When we submit these invoices to House and Senate management, they always ask why there isn't an appropriation to pay for it.
Thank you for that information. Is there any other questions? Or?
Yeah, I have a question.
Representative Horton.
I'm sorry. You view this as helpful language for from an accounting standpoint?
Does this make your life easier?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Horton, it would increase the appropriation and would be the basis for it would provide the funding to pay for the fees.
Staff
want
to...
The amendment actually does not increase the appropriation.
Mr. Huebinger noted that he was treated more gently than some other parts of the legislature he can absorb it.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I was working off the language that was adopted in the Senate about 2 hours ago.
Oh. Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Huebinger or on the amendment? Anybody in the audience want to testify in favor or in opposition of the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign?
No.
Motion carries. Prevails. Representative Pettis. Happy, sorry.
I would like to move to reconsider the A11 amendment.
Okay.
And actually to move to reconsider the amendment to the amendment.
Right.
I think that we were having some fun with a bidding war and trying to increase the amount of the mementos and trinkets up to a higher amount, but I actually do think that we should be paying attention to what we are doing and move that back to a $5 limit.
Okay.
So
we have to move to reconsider.
Well,
on that motion, we have to vote on it. Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman, I think it will work simply, and I don't think it will be any more complicated than if you just move to amend the 15 to 5. I don't think we have to go through the multiples, and I don't think it covers any problem. I don't think it creates any difficulty with getting it done.
Okay. So, would you like to...
I would like to move that we change that on line 1.13 amount from $15 to $5.
Okay.
And I'd like to ask for a roll call as well.
Okay. Roll call being requested. Representative Pepe.
I would like to offer a friendly amendment.
State your amendment.
I would like to add after the words less, remove the semicolon, add the words at resale value. And also, I just have a procedural question, Madam Chair.
I'm probably the best one to answer that question, but go ahead.
Do you have to be, to make a motion to reconsider, do you have to be a supporter? Do you have to be,
don't.
Okay.
On the prevailing side? No. The answer is no.
Okay.
But would not accept that as a friendly amendment. I think I just assume just leave the language but change the amount back to the original amount.
Okay. So if not, are you moving to amend the amendment?
I will move to I'll move to amend the amendment.
Okay. Then we have to vote on moving the amendment to the amendment. Representative Kahn.
Yes. Madam Chairman, I would urge members to support that. I think that does what people expect, and we don't have this silliness of someone giving us cups and someone. I realize what that costs in terms of staff time to everybody, in terms of figuring out all of those things. So I think that will leave the number the same, and that will do something that I think means that the credit union cup won't be taken away after it's been given.
Didn't those cups have our name on it or
something?
One, I'm going to ask that first inform Representative Pepin that she was correct, that in order to make a reconsideration motion, you have to be on the
floor.
Not in committee.
It's different.
Not in committee, only on the floor?
Yes.
It doesn't matter if the new motion is
changed. Yeah, I know. I was just going to, never mind, you were correct. But could you restate your amendment?
My amendment was to remove the semicolon on line 1.13 and insert the words at resale value, and the reason for that is that nobody's going to want some of the stuff we got that we have, but I think if we move it to the $5 or less, it's not actually going to be a value to anyone else other than
maybe my kids that like that cup that I got with my picture on it.
Okay. Hey. I don't think complicated
it.
Well, I would just like to say that I'm
sure
that I tried to keep my cup, but my LA was more diligent than me and took it from me and gave it back.
Oh.
I know, I'm so disappointed. Right?
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, you know, I don't know that that any of these rules that we've adopted really have made a tremendous amount of difference as to the practice to the good of the legislature or make any difference in public confidence, but I don't think in our committee today we should adopt the posture of amending the House gift ban rules without any kind of further proceeding or discussion in other committees. And so I think that we should leave the language as it was, reject the amendment to the amendment, and adopt the Poppy Amendment.
Okay. There's no further discussion on the Pepin Amendment, although, Madam Chairman, I want to point out that I support the Pepin Amendment. Okay. With no further discussion, then all those in favor of the Pepin Amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Aye. Aye.
No. Division. The motion does not prevail.
Division.
Those in favor of the Pepin Amendment, please raise your hands. Those against the Pepin Amendment, please raise your hand. I do have hearing damage from a child earache when I was a kid, and so I guess I didn't hear.
That's pretty good.
So the Pepin Amendment does prevail. So the amendment does prevail. So now we're voting on the full amendment. The amendment is to move it back to $5 and then incorporate.
No, we just fixed the bill. The amendment is in the bill, so you're just amending the bill to change the 15 to 5. With
okay, so now we're just changing the bill from 15 to 5
with the
Pepin Amendment attached to it.
Yes.
So that did prevail. Any further discussion? Representative De La Force.
I just say about Madam Chairman, my colleague, Representative Winkler, this is about the only place, I think, where we can consider and amend these rules, that we seem to be afraid of our own shadow, that if we move these de minimis amounts in controversy from 5 to 6 or 7, we're afraid to do it almost as much as we're afraid to consider pay raises, for example, supporting some of the per diem issues. So I think this is an appropriate place. And instead, I think you make a valid point. The public, I don't think, is going to, we're not going to kick the polls one way or the other by moving 5 to 10 or 10 to 15, for example. I think that, it's for example, we spend far more resources and time within the walls of this building worrying about what the public will think over a cheeseburger or a cup of coffee or a mug. And as I said, I don't think it's going to move the polls either way. What it does is it simply frees up the administration and the weight, the resources that we need to go through and the tracking down wayward mugs that have less to say.
Ma'am.
You know what I did? I just did mine. So I don't know if someone wants to call I don't know whichever cop would be in charge of that. Go get a search warrant for my office.
Representative, he's not running in, so it doesn't matter. He's on record. Representative.
Yes, sir. Madam Chair, Representative De La Force, it's not so much that this committee shouldn't consider it. It's just that we are tangling with something that is highly emotional for a lot of people, including the press, and it's far more symbolic than it is anything else, frankly, and I would rather that we simply, if somebody was so in favor of a $15 amount or changing any language, etc., you know, certainly they could introduce a bill and try to put their name right on top of that and move it through. And it's too late, Representative De La Force, for you to do that now. But Representative Kahn, I'm sure, is encouraged, but I just think that we're better off not addressing this in this manner today.
Representative Kahn, and then I think we should proceed to the
Madam Chair, I'll point out, you know, there are ways to write things in the bill. The master of doing this is no longer in the legislature. That's Representative former Representative Lee Greenfield, who once wrote in the Carlson administration, wrote a whole health and human services bill as one run-on sentence. So there was not one ability to do any line item veto of it. But I will point out that this language is standing out. The whole, it's very easy at any point along the way to amend this out, to take out the at resale value, to have a full discussion of this on the floor of the House or in the following committees. And so it's not hidden in any way that that is a sneaky way of getting this passed. So,
Representative Pepin, do you have a final comment?
Yes, Madam Chair. Representative Winkler, I understand that changing this from a $5 or less at resale value may be extremely emotional for some, but I just wanted to point out that perhaps some of the other amendments have also been a little bit emotional for some of us, and a rather large change in policy, such as the one we just took up about same-sex benefits. So if we're not going to take up if the idea is we're not going to take anything that's, you know, controversial or a huge policy change, then I would suggest we look at that, because that amendment we looked at before was a huge policy change.
Madam Chair, I would just like to say that, if we're going to have amendments that cause angst, I think that's fine, but I think angst that actually makes a difference one way or the other would be worthwhile. This makes no difference, but it causes angst. I don't know where we get by doing it.
Okay, will the roll call be requested? The clerk will take the roll.
Do we still want a roll call on this? This is a roll call to reduce it to 5.
Then request it.
Do you still want a roll call?
Actually, I don't need a roll call on it.
Okay. Roll call has now been unrequested and rescinded. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Okay, that is all the amendments that I have in front of me. So now we are to the bill as amended. Final comments. Representative Dave Laporte.
Madam Chair, thanks. There's one issue we haven't discussed here, and I don't know. I think there's some advocates who may want to address the committee. Manifestations of the bank data match tax compliance bill are within the state government finance bill, and I know there's some elements within House File 4301, which is Representative Lenchesky's supplemental tax bill. And the issue is that there are significant changes to Chapter 13, the Data Practices Act. And I think it's vitally important that, Madam Chair, that at some point that either the Subcommittee on Data Practices chaired by Representative Simon or Representative Mullery's full committee examines the ramifications of amending Chapter 13. So this gets beyond, I know we're dealing with numbers in your bill, and Representative Lenchesky has numbers in her bill, but I want to put it out there, and I've tried to reach some of the other legislative leaders as well, that we need to have a serious discussion in one of those forums about amending Chapter 13, because I know there's some significant concerns out there with respect to liability and other issues. So I would hope, Madam Chair, that you can prevail upon leadership as well to have some type of a hearing where we can vet the changes to Chapter 13 in the appropriate committee.
I know that there is someone who wishes to make some comments on it, and so we should call her. I will point out that, as opposed to some of these things in the bill where I might have gone on a creative edge, this issue came directly from the governor's office. And so we took it from the governor's office. We sort of assumed that the governor had vetted it and had put it in place. It was part of the governor's, the bill as introduced from the governor's office. So I didn't pay it the kind of attention that I might have if I had been thinking of it myself. But I do know there is some of
Representative Kahn, as the author of the bill, would you like to... like to proceed with public testimony? I know you have somebody wants to come up and testify, but after that, is it your desire that we allow for open testimony before the members ask questions on the bill or have any final comments on the bill as amended?
Madam Chair, I'm flexible. As I said, I think the point is, and especially not so much for this committee, but before this bill moves, or as the bill moves through the process here and in the tax bill, that there needs to be some kind of vetting here of the Chapter 13 language, and if that needs to be amended, so be it.
or if there are unintended consequences that are going to change this body's thinking about the bill, it may impact the money that we're banking in bills to balance the budget. So I'm just simply trying to sound a little bit of an alarm here that we have to take a careful look at this, because there may be some ramifications down the road to us even trying to balance the budget if we determine that the concerns are so valid that we need to take some type of radical action on it. That's my only point.
Okay, why don't we have the testifier come up, and then we will ask if there are any other members of the audience that would like to testify in support or in opposition to the bill, and then we will open it up to members of the committee for any closing comments or questions, if that's all right with the committee. Okay,
thank you.
Please state your name for the record.
For the record, my name is Judy Cook with Cook Hill Drive Associates, representing the Minnesota Bankers Association. I appreciate your indulgence. I will be brief because we did have a chance to testify earlier, and I know that Mark Humphrey is here from the credit unions, and she has additional comments. There's a variety of different issues, and we have been talking with the Department of Revenue, as all of you had suggested earlier, and I think it is correct to say that we are troubled that this hasn't gone through a variety of different committees where they would take up a host of different issues, such as the types of financial institutions that are covered, the types of accounts that are covered, the due process. In fact, how this does differ from the National Child Support Data Match Program, as well as what other states are doing. There's privacy issues, liability issues. The reimbursement is a huge issue for the financial institutions. I mean, we're just finally getting more data in about how much it's going to cost financial institutions, large and small, in order to implement this, just the initial implementation cost of hooking up to the Department of Revenue's website that they're going to put together for this, which has a whole new data privacy issue that we were even unaware of the last time we spoke. And there's jurisdictional issues as well, and an effective date issue. So, I mean, there's just a lot of issues that we'd like to bring to your attention. The Bankers Association is opposed to this provision. As I said, we've been talking to the Department of Revenue, and we recognize it came from the administration, so we appreciate the work that the authors and others and time have, the time that you've given us to raise these issues, and we'll continue to work on it. And I do hope to have the opportunity to discuss this perhaps in some committees where those issues are potentially more appropriate than here in this budget division. But I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Anybody have questions for the testifier at this moment? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious about the whole security piece, putting it on the Department of Revenue's website. Have you had any conversations with how are we going to keep this kind of information secure?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, that was a concern we had when we had when we met with them yesterday, and they assured us that it would be very secure. It's something currently they do with their clients for collections right now. But one of our concerns, and perhaps Ms. Humphrey could discuss that, is whether or not some of the smaller financial institutions actually have the encryption capability that would be necessary in order to interface with that website. So I do think that is an issue. And one other point, Madam Chair, you had asked about whether or not there was any national type thing, and there's a financial data match specifications that applies to the child support data match that apparently is federally utilized, and that is utilized for child support, and my understanding is this would not be consistent with that. So those are my brief comments. Thank you.
Any follow-up, Representative Anderson? Okay. Any other testifiers to this issue? Please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, my name is David Stilbrad, Vice President of Government Relations for
Welcome
the Independent
the
Community Bankers of Minnesota. Ms. Cook summarized a lot of the issues very well. I'm not going to repeat those. I do want to thank the authors of this bill for this moment to just check in and share our concerns about this issue with you. And the one thing I'll pick up on is what Chair Kahn said with respect to the vetting process of this issue. We were not aware of this until the supplemental budget was laid out a couple of weeks ago. So it's a surprise, it's a new surprising development, which is very, very complicated, as Ms. Cook said. and there's a number of issues that are left unresolved at this point in time. And so with that, I'll just conclude to say that we share the concerns of this issue, and also share the long list of unresolved things that need to be explored. Thank you very much.
State your name for the record.
Madam Chair and members, Mara Humphreys, the Minnesota Credit Union Network. I'm Vice President of Governmental Affairs. We represent the state's 162 credit unions. We'd be happy to bring new mugs if the law changes at the appropriate time.
On my back.
I didn't get one. Sorry.
Well, if we change the law, we'd be happy to do that once again. I'm going to just second Judy and David's comment on the Department of Revenue's data match proposal. For the credit unions, we are opposed to this proposal. We have some significant concerns about the implementation date, some more privacy concerns, and some cost concerns about the cost that this is going to be for credit unions to implement. As Judy alluded to, one of our specific concerns is for some of our smaller credit unions, their ability to implement this. So the Department of Revenue is basing this on the Child Support Data Match system. But under that, you can also deliver the information via electronic media, mailing it or faxing it to the department. And this proposal has the Department of Revenue requiring financial institutions to be able to transmit the information in an encrypted format through their website. And the department hasn't talked with any of the data processing vendors that, you know, a number of financial institutions use. So I think there's some big problems about how it's going to actually work on our side in terms of being able to implement this, especially with the effective date being as soon as it is. It seems very difficult for us to be able to implement this. Also, in terms of file format, to get specific on one issue, they only want to use the last four digits of the Social Security number. Under the Child Support Data Match, they use the whole thing, which makes it a lot easier to be able to make sure that you're getting the right person. And I know there's security concerns around using the whole Social Security number, but that does help us ensure that we are getting the right person. And we do have concerns that that's a significant change from what we are currently doing. I'd be happy to stand for any questions.
Any members of the committee have any questions for the testifier? Okay, thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to testify in support or in opposition to the bill? As amended. Mm-hmm. Members, do you have any additional questions on the bill as amended? Okay, seeing none, then Representative Dale Forrest, you're going to renew your motions to that House File 3987 pass. Be referred as amended to finance.
Sure.
All those in favor of the motion to pass House File 3987 as amended to finance, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
No.
No. Motion prevails. Thank you. Thank you. Is there any other business before the committee? All right. We go adjourn the meeting. Is this the last meeting?
No.
Meeting is adjourned.